What's up, guys? This is Tyler Lawrence Gray, and you're listening to Wolfpack on Not Another Teen Wolf podcast. Not a Teen Wolf spinoff.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Not Another Teen Wolf podcast. I am Natalie, and I'm joined by Karen for another episode covering Paramount Plus Wolfpack. This is a special episode. This is an introduction we're recording to a really cool and long interview we've done with one of the four main stars of Wolfpack, Tyler Lawrence Gray, who plays Harlan. So we did this episode before the show aired, and we had seen the first two episodes of Wolfpack. We were talking in detail about those contents with a few teasers for what's to come for the rest of the season. But we had a lot of fun talking to him. He's a really focused young man, I think. And yeah, it's going to be cool for you guys to hear what he has to say and get to know him. If you have any thoughts about this episode, you can write into us, obviously, on our social media, NATW Podcast at Twitter or Instagram, NATW Podcast at Gmail, or on Tumblr, notanotherteenwolfpodcast.tumblr.com. Please let us know what you thought of Tyler. We'll also link his social media in the post. But yeah, I just wanted to ask Karen about what she thought of the interview, I guess. So, like, just a little introduction to the interview, I guess. It's our first Wolfpack interview.
Yeah.
How do you feel about it?
I feel really good. I was so grateful that he let us talk to him for so long, because obviously schedules, sometimes you can't really help that. Like, sometimes you just got to get in a quick, like, 20 or 30 minute interview. But we ended up talking to him for like 90 minutes or something like that. And it was really in depth. I feel like we got all of the questions out. We got to really talk to him about things that we had noticed in the episode that we were super interested in. And obviously we asked him lots of questions, but we kind of knew that a lot of them he wasn't going to be able to answer. But it was just, it kind of reminded me why I enjoy doing this, because when you get to talk to an actor or an artist or a musician or anybody who kind of does this sort of thing and is passionate about what they do, it's just a really cool way to connect over something. Like, obviously he cares about Wolfpack because he's in it and he enjoyed this story enough to want to be in it, and he likes his character, and us as fans to be able to connect to him over that and kind of talk about this stuff in depth just gets me excited. And, you know, I've done a lot of interviews in my lifetime as a journalist and stuff, and I do get nervous sometimes, but once I get into it, I'm like, oh yeah, this is fun. This is great. I like talking to people about their craft.
Yeah. I mean, that pretty much covers it. He, you know, he's got a lot to say about all sorts of things, including his history or relationship with, like, science fiction, fantasy, like, you know, that kind of thing, and about the rest of the cast. I even got to talk a little bit about the EDM element, like Harlan's music taste and how he has kind of learned about that and been able to use that for his character. And then, yeah, just a lot of different things about the show, really, like about the concept of what might be driving these characters. If not spoilers, like a lot of, like, the kind of heart of what they're doing, I think, is what we talked about. It's it was really cool. Yeah, he did definitely sit down with us for a really long time and was happy to do a full podcast episode with us. So we're really happy to be able to bring you that, and hopefully you guys enjoy hearing it. So we're going to put that on now. This intro is recorded on a different day, so the sound change there might be a little sound change, but we're going to give you over now to us again, but with Tyler Lawrence Gray. And then, yeah, I guess that is it.
Yeah.
So first question straight out the bat is, what is your relationship to, like, supernatural and genre fiction or horror before booking the show? Were you a fan, or is it like a new world for you?
Yeah. It was honestly like my favorite genre, I would say. Whether or not it was horror, it was more just, you know, like the CGI with like action movies and stuff like that. Growing up, I was just obsessed with like animals and like dinosaurs. Like one of my favorite films growing up was Jurassic Park. Mm-hmm. I just thought that was so fascinating. So like, you know, I think that just developed from there onto the more like whatever could create like a non-realistic world compared to this one just like piqued my interest. And okay. From there, you know, I also grew up watching Teen Wolf as well. And yeah. Now we're here and now I'm just like, you know, fully embraced and in the supernatural world.
That's awesome. So I guess, you know, with Wolfpack in particular, like how did you first get involved with this production? I also heard that you tried out for the Teen Wolf movie too.
I did. I actually got both of the auditions literally like the same day. And I was freaking out because I was like, oh my God, no way. Like not only one project from Jeff Davis, but two. And one of them's like a whole new universe. Like I was freaking out. And I actually ended up getting called back for both of them. So meeting with Jeff twice for both of those projects, I knew that he was definitely interested. And it was such a surreal moment for me. I had never really like worked before. I had done like a commercial and I had just finished a feature film, like a small indie film. And I was just so in shock. And that was already like I was already like satisfied with that. I was like, you know what? If it doesn't go any further, I already put my face in front of Jeff and in front of the producers. That's a check off the bucket list. And then from there, I found out, oh, the Teen Wolf movie's not going any further. I was like, uh-oh, like, does that mean the other one? And it like finally connected to me that it was moving further with Wolfpack. And then obviously we're here now and it's crazy.
Yeah, it is quite. Jeff, you know, he obviously works a lot within the world of the supernatural and, you know, using that kind of fantasy genre to make an impact. And, you know, working with him under in a genre like, you know, like for Wolfpack, like this supernatural thing, since having worked on the show, what is your like kind of, I was like, give us your like deepest, most philosophical opinion about like what you've learned about the power of this kind of storytelling, like supernatural world. And in your opinion, what role does this kind of horror supernatural stuff feel for people that maybe you said, you know, that level of fantasy, not the real world. What does that kind of do for us, do you think?
Yeah, well, I think it's not only is it able to sort of break like stereotypes and stigmas because it is like its own world and it's not like this one, but since this project in particularly is very close to this world, except it is supernatural, I honestly think it's just a way to express that, you know, sort of like any genre. You can tell stories through romance, you can tell stories through comedy, you can tell stories through horror, and they can all be the same story, just in different ways. But I think supernatural especially is great because like the metaphor is always there, especially because of like how unrealistic it could seem sometimes, especially like, you know, like humans not really being humans, like turning into like werewolves and stuff. I think it's a greater metaphor for like, you know, everyone's different. And regardless to what that may be, everyone still has the same simple desires mm-hmm. at the end of the day. And I think that that's beautiful because like you present someone, you know, like these characters with such a like gory and scary like creature and aspect that comes into their world, and they're still worried about the smallest issues they had before this happened, you know, like their family dynamics and, you know, their romance situations. And I don't know, I just think that it's beautiful.
Yeah. Obviously, you've got, you know, Sarah Michelle Gellar on the show, who's been such a huge part of that world. You know, I heard her talking about what it means to her. So I was just curious about, yeah, what you guys, you know, the young team were kind of getting from taking that to the new generation. So that's really cool.
You mentioned, you know, Jurassic Park and, of course, Teen Wolf and everything. What are some of your favorite examples of TV, movies, books, anything, even specific characters that have really made an impact on you as a person and maybe even what you want to do as an actor?
You know, honestly, I used to really be inspired by superheroes. And I know that's very common and cliche, but I sort of started to challenge that thought, like, why do these superheroes make me want to, like, you know, be great? And I think it's because they possess, like, this power that, you know, is stronger than the average person. And I sort of resonate with that in a sense of, like, you can have a power like that if you decide to, you know, just have impact on people. I've realized that in a world like this, where we're all the same, like, the real power is, you know, that positive energy, especially, unfortunately, with, you know, some of the circumstances we're in now, where there's a lot of hate going around the world. And, you know, we're like, that impact changing people's lives and almost saving people, just like superheroes used to do, especially people like Captain America, someone who literally just fights for, like, good. He never has ill intent towards anyone, and he's willing to put his life on the line for anybody. I kind of view that similarly with acting. I mean, people do it all the time, like doctors, people in the military, like, literally just putting their everything on the table just for other people, just to save other people. And unfortunately, that's the kind of world that we live in right now, where, like, those kind of things have to happen. I don't think that they should, but since they are, I feel like acting is honestly one of the most powerful ways you can do that, because everyone loves films and everyone who's dealing with things loves to escape. And films is a perfect way to escape. I know for a fact, whenever I've been dealing with stuff, if I watch a good movie, I am not thinking about any of that stuff for as long as the movie is. And, like, it's like therapy. So you look up to the characters in the films and you really look up to the actors. So that's something that I realized I could do now. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just smiling because if I turn the computer around, you'd see about 3 or 4 pieces of Captain America merch on the wall that I am looking at. He is my favorite, particularly because I think he's a really good example of a character who is, for a long time in the media, there was a lot of basic perception that, like, for a character to be like interesting, they have to be like kind of like a dick, like they had like as in, like, good people are, like, boring.
Problematic.
Yeah, like, good people are boring. Whereas I think Steve Rogers is the best example of, like, a person who is good, but he's also, like, you know, he rebels against the government and he, you know, does what's right no matter what. And I think that he's a great example of, like, a heroic character who is not boring, but is, like, very good. With Harlan, getting into Harlan, obviously there's a bit of a gap between Harlan and Captain America, but I was curious, you know, he starts out a bit cynical, and I'm just wondering, like, when you first sort of started performing Harlan, and we're gonna, you know, obviously talk a lot about him, were there any kind of character archetypes or performances, supernatural, you know, or otherwise, or any kind of inspirations for, like, who this kind of character is? Like, did you draw from anything, or did Jeff give you any examples of who he kind of might be like?
You know, honestly, it's weird because I actually remember asking Jeff before we started shooting, I was like, is Harlan, like, a villainous character? Because obviously you guys have seen the first 2 episodes and like, he seems like he's not really, you know, down to, like, help, especially with the sister and stuff. And I was like, is Harlan, like, a bad person? And Jeff is like, no, he's just hurt.
Mm-mm.
And that really, like, changed my whole perspective. I was like, huh, like, I realized what he was going for with that. You know, he wants to show someone who could be perceived as bad you know, just like a lot of people, even like when they try to do villains in like the superhero movies, like they always are painted as like the bad guys. And then you find out like they're the ones who are the most deeply hurt. And, you know, sometimes they can be saved and other times they can't. So honestly, at first, I was sort of like watching a lot of movies around like villains because I was like, oh, okay, like this is sort of his thought process. And then along the way, it changed to more people who had like deeper problems that they were trying to deal with, you know, in their upbringing. And honestly, I'm trying to think of anyone specific, but honestly, a really good movie that I saw, and obviously this isn't on the level that Harlan has to deal with, but the new Joker movie with Joaquin Phoenix, he really did a good job portraying like this just mental illness and suffering, trying to show that like the people out there that are seen, that are deemed as like bad, are really the ones struggling, and people just turn a blind eye to them and they just let them struggle. And I really just liked that, because even though the Joker, you know, causes chaos at the end of the movie, he never had ill intent. He was always wondering, why is he receiving all this hate? Just because people, you know, perceive him as someone who's weak or someone who is, you know, not capable of achieving anything that they could. And I really thought that was like beautiful, because, you know, even though he does a lot of violent things that causes him to like turn, a lot of people go through that every day. Whether it's, you know, you're in high school and you're dealing with a high school bully because you're not the popular kid and you like different things that, you know, doesn't fit like the social standard, or just in the real world, same thing. Like, I feel like there's this social standard that sets this precedent that you either are with like the mass herd of everyone and you're considered like cool, or you're considered like a nerd or like a weirdo. But honestly, I've realized it is so much more fun to just like be who you are, even if you're considered the weirdo, because you're not. You're not. It's just like a stupid stigma that has been created through society like over the last couple centuries. And I personally geared towards a lot of different things. I mean, I was an athlete growing up. I love sports, but, you know, I also love watching anime and I love playing video games and I love all of the events at Comic-Con. And like, you know, everyone just finds their own desires and their own things that they enjoy doing. So back to the original question. That's why I sort of thought he was becoming a villain, because he was struggling. But I realized that like, just because you're struggling doesn't mean you're the bad guy.
Yeah, no, definitely not. And I think from what we've seen so far, that it's definitely going to be more of a vulnerable kind of, you know, lashing out, you know, out of vulnerability, and that he's going to probably be a big fan favorite because of seeing that softness. But yeah.
Yeah.
You can see that in the horizon.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's really interesting that one of your, you know, first, your initial questions about him was whether he was a villain. And I guess that makes me want to know, like, it, you know, what did you most connect to about Harlan when you first read him? Like, what in there, like, how did you see past that potentially villainous nature? And like, what did you really connect to?
I realized almost immediately, honestly, after reading the pilot, I was like, all right, here's someone who has sort of a dysfunctional relationship with his immediate family that he's living with right now, because, you know, there's this underlying problem that is unanswered and he's unable to accept what he has in front of him because of that unanswered question. And, you know, personally, I went through a few years where I really just felt so disconnected from the world. And it was because like there was questions that I had like unanswered. Maybe it was not having the right friends, or, you know, I always had my family right in front of me. But especially after, you know, shooting the show and sort of portraying it through Harlan's eyes, I've realized that like my family has always been there for me. And maybe like that, those points in my life where I felt lost and wanted to distract myself, like Harlan, I sort of took it for granted. And I feel like it's because it was kind of driven by fear. As much as you want to know the unknown, you fear the unknown. And that was one thing that I couldn't accept. I just thought like, okay, if I just keep forgetting about it and I keep just brushing it off, I won't have to deal with it, right? And little did I know, there was this like almost darkness like growing inside of me because I kept pushing it down instead of, you know, just trying to get help, you know, just literally talking to anyone, like my friends, a therapist. I feel like Harlan's sort of the same way. I mean, we literally open up with him at the club, dancing, not knowing a single person there because that's how he likes it. He likes just meeting new people and not having to, you know, have any connection with anyone because he's obviously scared of losing people and he's scared of letting people in at the same time. He has severe trust issues. And that sort of is how I felt for a while as well. I didn't know who I could let into my life. And honestly, I thought it was because, you know, people would break that trust. But what I didn't realize is I was just scared to even take that chance.
Yeah. I want to talk about the actual scenes in the first couple of episodes in a bit. We're kind of going to ask you a few questions at the end that are a bit more like spoilery about the content of the episodes. But with Harlan, okay, after you booked it, were all the scripts already locked when you started shooting, or was there anything about Harlan that developed between you and Jeff since you got the part, like changes or things that you were able to incorporate in that kind of meant that, yeah, there were things along the way that you grew the character that ended up making into the show?
Yeah, we actually got the scripts as we were shooting the episodes because Jeff was just so wrapped up with like, you know, finishing the Teen Wolf movie and really making sure that, you know, every single detail in the show meant something. It was, you know, and I know why he did it now. I'm not going to give anything away, but I know exactly what he was doing, not only for the plot of the story, but also to keep us as the actors like invested. You know, like it was almost like waiting for a new episode to come out every week.
Yeah.
We would meet up with all the actors and be like, guys, there's a new episode that he sent us. We need to read it right now.
Right.
And as much as I liked that, I sort of wish that I kind of knew where the story was going to go for my character's sake. But it did help me realize that I thought Harlan was just a really toxic person. But how selfish and oblivious of me to think that when the whole point of Jeff's, you know, creation with this project is to show that people can grow and people can develop. And obviously, like, I don't want to give anything away, but like he does. All the characters do. All the characters go through such a traumatic and drastic change to where, yes, they're forced to adapt and to accept. And I realized, you know, by the time I was shooting episode 8, I mean, I just knew Harlan so much better at that point.
Mm-hmm.
It went from like doing like deep character study and like writing down notes on all the lines to just like, I know exactly why he's doing this right now.
Okay.
So as much as I wish I had that at the beginning, it made the experience so much better that I had to figure it out for myself.
That's interesting. And if he was writing while you were shooting, you know, he was probably incorporating things he knew or in your wheelhouse into Harlan, as opposed to it all being fixed before he even met you.
Yes, that's another very interesting point that you bring up, because I noticed he would write all of our lines geared towards the way we like speak and the way we act. And I was just fascinated by that. I was like, not only is he developing the story, but he's almost like a therapist, like studying and picking apart all of our brains and realizing what works best for all of us. The man is like a genius. He kind of freaks me out. Like,
I mean, that's a good thing. It's sort of different to, I guess, getting the part and having it all set in stone, like before you started performing it, I guess. So that's quite cool.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah. It was a wild experience, something that I've never, ever experienced before. I feel so much more developed as an actor. Like, I really hope we can continue to season two, because now I'm like, oh my God. Like, I need to just keep going with this character now.
And I guess, you know, you were talking about kind of receiving those episodes as they came out and not getting them all at once. So as you were reading through the scripts and everything, is there a character's arc other than your own that really struck you most when you were reading through them? Are there any, you know, actors in the show that you think are really going to just like blow people's minds?
Look, like the four of us, they all blew me away. And honestly, Jeff told us all at the beginning, like, where our characters sort of would have gone by the end of the season. And we were all pretty excited for it. But I would just have to say Armani, because, you know, he is portraying Everett, a kid with like crippling anxiety. And like, I was just so impressed by his performance, because like, I know Armani like very well now, and we hang out, and like, he's not like that in real life. So like, to be able to like sell that so good, it literally like made me separate two different people in my head. Like, I would literally consider like Everett as one person and Armani as another person. And as his character sort of develops, he showcases even more of this talent, to where I'm like, how do you know how to do this as a 19-year-old kid? Like, I mean, he really just blows me away. And we've had a lot of good deep talks about it, because even he, you know, he told me that he was homeschooled and a lot of people like gave him a hard time for it and called him an idiot. And I literally was like, Armani, you're anything but, like, you're literally a genius, dude. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think all of them are. Working with all of them honestly makes me very, I don't want to say insecure, but like, I realize that I really need to just keep staying on my A game and like step it up, because they all just like blow me away. It's like we're just in a different world. It's almost like playing a video game with them and we're all just like choosing different characters.
That is actually such a great segue to what I actually had as my next question, which is like, obviously on this show, you've got a couple of like really experienced veterans, like Sarah and Rodrigo, which we'll get to in a second. But with the four of you, my understanding is that you and Chloe are very new, but Armani and Bella had like child actor stuff on like big sets and things like that, that they had more experience. And I was curious about what that dynamic was like, to have this group of peers where, you know, you've got a couple of them that have like long-term experience on big sets and a couple of them are really new. You know, how you guys kind of interacted together as actors, or if you, yeah, what you guys shared from having that different experience to one another.
Yeah, honestly, like, I sort of knew that going into it, and I am the newest out of the four of us by far. Like, they have like double the amount of years that I've been doing it. So like, I totally respect them as actors and respect all of their choices, because they've experienced more on set and they've embodied more characters. But I was honestly a little worried that, you know, they would have like a slight ego coming into it, like knowing that they're more experienced, thinking they're better. But I can genuinely say that we all respected each other so well. There was scenes for all of us where we would rap and just hug that one person, or they would hug me and be like, that was absolutely incredible. Like, you're so talented. And like, that's just, you know, that's such a healthy relationship, because like, if it was the other way around, now you're not only dealing with like the acting itself, but now you're like, wow, no, they think I'm a bad actor. They think I'm cringy. And like, that's another like barrier to get over. But the fact that we were always just lifting each other up, like, it honestly made us all even better actors. Yeah. Like I said, I'm constantly trying to stay on their level. I'm sure they would say the complete opposite. Like, oh my God, Tyler's being humble. Like, he's,
you know, he's on the same level as us, but that's just how I feel, especially, you know, this being my first project, my first big project. I have nothing but respect towards all of them.
Yeah. Obviously, this is a massive cast, but the two lead adults with Rodrigo and Sarah, can you talk a bit about each of them? And, like, obviously you have, you know, a very specific relationship with Rodrigo on the show and then Sarah as kind of this massive veteran who's bringing a lot of attention to the show but has so much experience in this area. Can you talk about a little bit about each of them and what being with them was like?
Yeah, so I think I met Sarah first and I was like, you know, starstruck. I was like, oh my God, I am so nervous to even go up and say hi to you. Never mind, do a scene with you. What? And like, their performance was there, obviously. It was always there. She was always like so sharp to the point where, like, I mean, she's executive producing as well. So like, she would even tell them to adjust lights. And I was like, how are you balancing all of this in your brain? Like, you're just like so like impressive. But also, she would be able to just in between takes, like crack jokes with us and like say little smart, like funny things. And I was just like, you're such a professional, but also like she genuinely cares about like teaching us stuff. She really stressed to us, like, you know, stay humble, keep your head on straight. This industry can take you down roads that you don't want to go down. Remember why you're here. You know, you're here because you were, you know, that actor that was struggling at one point looking for work and you would have done anything, but now you're here. So, you know, take advantage of that opportunity and really, like, you know, make an impact on people and stay humble. And we all did. I think we all just like listened to her, like, yes, like her being a good role model like that, like really, it really set the tone for the way we would like go into work. And like to this day, we still geek about working with Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yeah.
You know, she's incredible. Yeah.
It is pretty amazing to see, because, you know, a lot of the press surrounding the show has been kind of touching on that, her talking very vocally about how when she was young, she didn't have people advocating for her, and that she, one of the main reasons she wanted to do this was to advocate for you guys. So you guys are pretty lucky, or like pretty, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah. Like I really just feel like blessed being able to work with her and for her realizing that, because I know she genuinely does, based off of the advice she's given us. And like, you know, she literally calls us her cubs. Like she's like a mom figure to us. And honestly, like I could say the same about Rodrigo being like
dad,
a father figure to us on set. He's another one where you're just like, you know, so blown away by his past performances and you're kind of nervous to work with him. And talk about someone who literally just like dives into their craft and like doesn't want to come out. Like just wants to stay in there forever. Like he is one of the most passionate actors I've ever seen. Like I'll never forget the first time I ever met Rodrigo. He came up to me and Chloe and he had a gift for us. He got us flip-flops that he brought all the way from Brazil. So already off the bat, I was like, oh, Rodrigo, you've already sold me, man. Like you've already bought my approval. Like, and you know, that was just to show that like, he recognizes who we are. He appreciates, you know, who we are, and he's excited to work with us. And wow, working with him and just watching him work, like, I realized that like acting is like the only thing I need. Like, it's not the parties or the fame or anything like that. He really just put acting in a different perspective for me, because, you know, he was like, so how do you, when he sat us down, he's like, how do you feel about your guys' characters? And we're like giving our little descriptions as like, you know, we already had. And he was like, okay, well, what do you think occurred in Harlan and Luna's lives before this point in the story? And we were like, huh, well, Rodrigo, we don't have that.
And he's like, exactly. You can make it whatever you want. And he explained like all of these different things that he imagined, you know, he as, you know, our stepfather, like did with us. And yeah. I was like, wow, like that actually puts a lot more into perspective. And it allows me to like already have this imaginary relationship between me and him.
Yeah.
And it definitely helped. I'll never forget, like he literally, we connected so much working on set. Like he brought out like the best performances in me.
Yeah. And, like, I can see that. Well, I can't see it, but like, cause we haven't seen it yet, but I can, given the established dynamic in the first couple of episodes, I can see that those scenes will be very emotional when we get to them. Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah. You know, you've been talking a lot about how everyone else has a lot of experience and a lot more experience than you. But I have to say that you being at New York Comic Con, you know, I wasn't there. I've been to New York Comic Con a bunch of times. I know what it's like. I know how overwhelming it is. It's amazing and terrifying all at once. But you were, at least you seemed so incredibly comfortable on stage promoting this show. So like, what was that weekend for you like? What was it like being, because you know, I've never been on one of those stages. I imagine it's probably a little scary. How was it looking out into that audience and knowing everybody was there for you?
Well, first of all, thank you for noticing that. I appreciate that, because I bet you can only imagine like exactly what I was thinking. Oh my God, there's no way this is happening. I've never done anything to this scale. I've never even been to Comic-Con. So never mind like now being on stage and like talking to people. I almost felt like I didn't deserve it. And I was sort of like panicking. And like, of course, like Armani and Belle and Chloe, they're like, no, Tyler, like don't even think like that. Like we're all here for a reason. Like you really gotta like make an impact now. And I was like, you know what? You're right. And it, again, like it was bringing me over this thought of like fear, you know, fear of like whatever it was, public speaking, you know, going out of your comfort zone. So when I actually went up there, I was like, you know what? You're right. Like everyone here is just like praying that like not only me, but everyone succeeds in this show. They're praying that it does well. Yeah. They're not there like
to throw things at you.
Well. Yeah, like they're supporting us. So really like made me feel a lot better. And I was like, you know what? Like if they're here to support me, I'm gonna give them everything they want. So that's sort of the mindset I had about it. And I mean, honestly, now I realize it's just something that keeps developing. I mean, I was even nervous to have like my first Zoom interview. And now, you know, talking with you guys, I just love it now. It's just like having a regular conversation with friends.
Well, hopefully
and it's great because it just makes me feel more comfortable.
Yeah. Hopefully they're all good. Just, but you know, we'd like to think that, you know, we are, you know, having a good conversation. But hopefully they'll probably some of them will be weird, some of them will be awkward, but hopefully this is a good first impression.
Yeah, you know what, like some of them are sort of like, I can tell they're just straight to the point, answer the questions so we can give it to the media. But like,
yeah,
I really appreciate when, you know, people make it more conversational, because then I even forget that we're like doing an interview. Like, honestly, talking to you guys so far, it feels like I'm on FaceTime with like friends right now. We're just like chatting.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. Cause obviously, you know, it's nerve wracking on our side of things, at least for me. It's nerve-wracking sometimes too to do these interviews and everything, but it's always nice when you just sit down and remember that, hey, we're both fans of this thing, you know, you're acting in it, we're watching it, and we're kind of on the same team here. And I guess that, you know, kind of transitions into like even going to the premiere and being able to watch this episode and everything, like the premiere episode. What was that like for you, especially after New York Comic Con? Like, has your mindset changed a little bit? Was it scarier in a different way or more exciting in a different way?
It was definitely more exciting. I at the premiere, I was like, this is sort of what an actor devotes their time to, for the final product, for everyone to sit down and, you know, see if they like it or not. And honestly, I wasn't even worried if people like were going to like it or hate it, because I was proud of what I did. And I was proud of all the other actors and the entire crew. I know how much time we all spent some days where we're just exhausted. It's like 3 a.m. and we're all like on like our third cup of coffee, like waiting to just like wrap. But we know that like we have to do it, because there is people out there that will appreciate it. That's the beautiful thing about acting and like art with film, is that regardless of, you know, how the outcome is, you will find like a group of people that genuinely enjoy it. That's sort of the point that I try to remind myself all the time of, like, why I'm an actor. You know, it's not so people can just like hype you up and, you know.
Yeah. Can I just say, I love you. And I was going to say, can I just say, I am the best question structurer in the world, or I love you and you're psychic, because you keep bringing these leads into the ends of your answers that lead perfectly to the next question. Because what I was going to say is, you know, you just said like, you know, there's going to be a group of people who this matters to. And I was going to say, what kind of person do you think is going to love this show? Who do you hope it resonates with?
I think it resonates with anyone who can relate to it. I don't think it resonates to a specific group of people. I think it just resonates to, you know, who's going to watch it and who's going to be just like, they're just going to feel that connection, whether it's with one character or with the entire plot of the show. Obviously, we were saying like the fans of the Supernatural are going to love this. Like the Teen Wolf fandom, they're going to love this, even though some of them are upset. Like, it's not Teen Wolf exactly. You're getting
to basically
restart all over again. They'll come around to it. But there's going to be people out there who are just, you know, having their own internal struggles, or maybe they have a bad family dynamic, or maybe they just really like see themselves in a certain character and they'll have no choice but to keep watching the show and love it. Like, I know I've seen plenty of films where like I just love a specific character and I just like I'm so compelled, like I can't stop watching it and I need like more. It's not always about entertainment. I feel like some people just watch stuff to be entertained, but I know that a lot more people watch things almost as like therapy, just to relate. I mean, my family tells me all the time, you know, like even my sister, she's like, I love when I can like really connect to shows and really just like binge something. It's so like therapeutic, and it really just like helps me through times where I'm not like feeling okay. And I honestly, I guarantee that that happens with everyone.
I think Wolfpack in particular also sets itself up really well for that, because the characters, like for me, Everett is the one that I'm already immediately connecting to, because I also have pretty intense anxiety sometimes. And I feel like a lot of people will find, if not whole characters, aspects of characters to really kind of latch onto. And I think that, you know, if this show, hopefully it does, if the show has as dedicated of a fan base and as big of a legacy as Teen Wolf, what do you hope that people will remember Wolfpack for?
I hope they'll just remember it any positive way that they want to. Obviously, you know, I would love for them to remember it as a show like Teen Wolf or Stranger Things, you know, these huge world-renowned supernatural shows that have literally like changed the course of television. But I really just want people to be able to be like, that show really helped me through that time that I was like really not okay. I would love nothing more than for a fan or just a viewer to come up to me and not be like, can I get your autograph? But instead just be like, you saved my life, or you changed my life, or you put this into perspective to me, you know, whether it's like to accept more people, to accept everyone, or
to accept yourself. For a really long time, I've always been accepting of everyone. Maybe it's because I didn't have a lot of friends in high school, and I was able to sort of like relate to the other kids that didn't have friends in high school and understand like, you know, why certain kids didn't like them. But I never resented any hate towards anyone. But I realized growing up, I resented the most hate towards myself. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you really gotta be able to love yourself before you go and judge someone else. And that's usually why people judge other people, is because they're upset or insecure with something about themselves. And it used to make me so upset when people would make fun of me. I used to be like overweight. People would make fun of me for that. I have really bad tics. Sometimes I blink a lot. Sometimes I like twitch a little bit. And like people used to give me like a hard time about that. And like it used to like get in my head so much. And then I was like, at one point I was like, why am I craving their validation? They're not even okay with themselves. I'm not even okay with myself. And then when I learned to just love myself, that's when I was the most happy and had the most peace of mind. Mm. And I want people to be able to realize that with the show. So I hope we can get that point across somehow.
Yeah, cool. Okay, we've got a bunch of questions now that are actually about like the content of the show. Some of them might be like really spoilery that you're like, you can, you know, literally just be like, you'll have to wait and see. Like some of them may not have an answer that you're able to answer. But if you're good for time, we've got a few questions about the actual episodes coming up. Is that cool?
I'll try my best.
Okay. Yeah. First impressions, Harlan's introductory scene at the rave party. What sort of impact did you want to create for the audience about who he is, or like, you know, whether that's from you, from Jeff? Our first look at Harlan is a very, you know, specific look. What was that trying to achieve?
I wanted him to be seen as like the cool guy, like the cool character, like the one with the swagger, but not like your typical swagger, like the high school quarterback or someone like that. But, you know, someone who's like sort of in this underground like rave area, and he's just dancing and like he's doing his own thing, and like he's not even supposed to be there because of his age, but he is, because he's a little defiant. And I know that people love that rebellious, defiant vibe, even if it promotes not the best, like, you know, behavior. I still think people are going to enjoy that. And I know that Jeff really wanted to make this kind of character like as cool and like tough as possible. Because, you know, I feel like, you know, especially him being gay, unfortunately, with like some stereotypes out there, a lot of people get like this specific thing. And like, I have met gay people of all different personalities and all different likings. I've met like super jacked, dominant people who identify as gay. I've met, you know, people who enjoy doing more subtle things, people who are feminine, you know, like people just want to be themselves. But unfortunately, with these stigmas and these stereotypes that exist, people aren't able to see it like that. So I know that Jeff wanted to make, you know, someone who is seen as like the popular, dominant, you know, kid full of swagger, and all of a sudden he's gay. And I think it'll really put into perspective for a lot of people, wow, you're right. Being gay doesn't define you at all.
And it's not a closeted story either. It's not like that's his trauma that he's gay. Oh, that he's that's totally accepted and open, which is Jeff. Jeff always does that. Yeah.
Yeah. I actually asked Jeff at first. I was like, so is this sort of his underlying thing that he's struggling with? And he's like, no. He is out and proud. And I was like, okay, cool. Yeah. Cool. I like that a lot. I haven't really seen that with too many characters on television.
It's actually interesting because of all of the what we were saying about the film characters and stuff, Harlan specifically, his archetype of being that kind of tough, a bit of a gym rat, and into that kind of music and kind of the snarky swagger rebel, He actually does remind me of a character from a book series that I like who is gay, but that story is a closeted story where he is traumatized about being gay. So he's kind of like that, but not at all. So that's really, that was the really interesting to me. So yeah, I mean, I'm a fan of the first scene. It certainly sets the tone.
I love the fact that he has that representation for the community now. I feel like it's just gonna, you know, help people who maybe are closeted to be like, oh, it's actually not a big deal at all because it doesn't define me as a person. I can still continue, you know, to live my life as I was. And just because I have a sexual preference doesn't mean I have to change at all. It doesn't mean people should treat me differently at all.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of that opening scene at the rave, it becomes pretty clear that, like, out of all of the wolves, it seems like Harlan's most heightened superpower is hearing. So was there anything that you did to kind of prepare to portray that? Did they show you any examples of, like, what exactly he would be able to hear in order for you to react to?
Yeah. So they kind of, because I was sort of curious, like, okay, like, can he hear, like, just a little louder? Or, like, they're like, obviously, in the first episode, he can literally hear a heartbeat. So, like, his hearing is so keen that he can almost hear, like, anything, whether it's, like, from long distance or whether it's, you know, really close up and personal. And it's sort of, you know, I sort of understood why Jeff wanted to give him the hearing. Maybe it's, you know, maybe Jeff will correct me if I'm wrong, but I have a feeling it's because Harlan is confident and he's almost a little cocky. And with the hearing, you know, it's kind of like, I can hear everything, by the way. You're not, like, smarter than me. You can't get anything by me because, like, I'm literally hearing everything at all times whenever I want to. Yeah. So I feel like that sort of gave me a little more perspective on the character.
Yeah. And when they kind of did, like, the, for example, in episode two, like, when, you know, when you were hearing things that were not, like, when it was kind of, like, messing with him and stuff like that, like, do they kind of play, like, you a track of, like, what kind of sound you would be reacting to? Like, not necessarily in the room, but, like, did you actually hear the kind of sounds that were going to be in the mix that were for Harlan's enhanced, what he was
actually taking? No. Mm-hmm. They just basically told me, they were like, here we want, you know, Harlan's senses. Obviously, there's some sort of connection with, you know, like, sexual senses and emotional senses. It gets heightened when, you know, these sort of things happen with Harlan. And it's almost out of his control. Like, he can't really control it. I think that's why he reacted so, like, surprised and, like, shocked. And they just told me, like, you know, basically pretend like, you know, you were listening to music and all of the sudden it just was, like, blowing your eardrums out. And I was like,
yeah,
that's probably happened to me, like, once or twice. Like, I think I can pull from experience.
I have a little bit more about that episode two stuff in a second, but I just wanted to ask, like, I love that his superpower is the hearing, and that the way that we're introduced into that is by him hearing that, the specifics of, like, the reverb, the mixer of the DJ, and that using that to, like, hit on him. I thought that was so great. I was just curious, like, is, you know, he's clearly into that kind of, like, house EDM kind of stuff. Did you listen to a lot of music for Harlan? Is it separate from your own music taste, or, like, what did you, because he clearly really seems to be swept up in that scene, and it's a big part of at least his life right now.
Yeah, no, definitely. And honestly, as far as, like, the house and EDM goes, I didn't really listen to any of that before, you know, obviously playing this sort of character. But obviously I had to get more familiar with it, and it was, like, genre of music I barely knew anything about, but it's actually really cool. And now I want to go to, like, a rave or, like, Coachella or just something like that to experience, like, that adrenaline, because now I understand. But he also, like, when I was talking to Jeff about it, he told me that, yeah, Harlan's, like, he's just very, like, amped up. Like, he loves, like, the adrenaline rushing, like, EDM, house music, rock. I personally love rock and roll music. It's arguably like my favorite genre of music. So like I already knew like the heavy metal bands like Metallica and stuff like that. So I was sort of able to understand like where his character was coming from with that kind of music taste. And now obviously like I even have friends who like have made like house and EDM beats because they're producers. And now I'm like really interested in it because I'm like, wait, hold on. No, like I like that music now. Like let me hear it. So
yeah, cool.
Yeah.
So later in that same scene, Luna obviously shows up, and with the two of them, it very much seems like Harlan is trying to distance himself from his sister. And I think, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think from his perspective, it just seems like she's really needy and he's just not as interested in being as close to her as she is with him. So can you tell us anything there, maybe about like, were they ever close? And this could be going to spoilery territory because we obviously don't know what else we're going to see throughout the season, but were they ever close? And like, maybe how did they get to this point where like, they're just not really on the same page?
Yeah. Honestly, I think it's just because of Harlan's upbringing. You know, we see in episode one when they're having that argument and she's like, you know, dad's missing, and he's like, yeah, but he's not a real one. Like obviously there's some sort of underlying tone there where, like I said before, like Harlan's not, he has an unknown mystery that he's just so caught up in that he almost refuses to accept that like this is his family now. Like this is the family that's always been here for him. And I think that's why him and Luna butt heads so much, because she's fully around that fact. And she's like more than willing to like have that family and honestly grow it. You know, she's someone who is so empathetic. She wants to have friends. He likes just being like the lone wolf and staying like mysterious and, you know, doing his own thing, not really getting to know people. And Luna's sort of the exact opposite. Like she craves that human interaction and that connection. And
yeah,
I think that's also why, you know, when the four of us come together, Luna's more like apt to accepting the fact that, you know, Blake and Everett might have the same gift as them, but Harlan's like not for it at all, because he's sort of driven by fear.
Yeah, it's actually kind of interesting, because that was kind of the impression that I got, that, you know, Harlan is definitely kind of in that you're not my real dad phase of the adopted parent, but it doesn't necessarily seem to relate to the fact that he's a werewolf. Like Luna seems like she's more the one that's obsessed with them being werewolves, whereas Harlan not accepting Garrett doesn't seem to be like, I'm a werewolf and you're not. It's just more the element of like, I don't, like, why didn't my real parents want me or something like that?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I was just curious about that. Like, obviously, there's the beautiful moment with Garrett recording his black box, you know, recording to the kids in case he dies, and how he used to be close with Harlan. And, yeah, so I guess it might be a spoiler, but what is some of that perspective for Harlan? If it's not about, I'm a werewolf, you're not a werewolf, why did he start rejecting Garrett?
I think because, you know, Garrett is a park ranger that adopted them. And obviously they are aware that they have this crazy genetic mutation, but why is Garrett just a normal human being? I think it honestly ties in to a lot of kids who have divorced parents and, you know, that first accepting of like the step parent, they're like, well, you're not my real parent. And they're like, yeah, I've barely known you. Like, even if they've known him for a while, like they can't accept, because it's like they're so caught up in wanting to find out more about like their biology and like their biological parent. And I think it sort of ties in with Harlan's sort of like fear of what he knows he's capable of, because he doesn't know why. He doesn't know where he came from. He doesn't know anything. And I think he's so wrapped up into it to where he's scared of it. Because he doesn't know what he's capable of. Like, he doesn't know what's going to happen if that sort of thing like really gets out of hand. And I think he refuses to accept Garrett because he's like, we're not the same. Even though Garrett's like, it's okay to not be the same, we're family. But obviously Harlan has to, you know, really get around that fact and really learn that family isn't about sometimes being biologically the same.
Yeah, it's interesting because he seems to want to avoid engaging with being a werewolf, but he also doesn't want to accept that either.
So, it's a mess. Jeff for you. Very good dynamic right there, in my opinion. Yeah. I think that's beautiful.
One of the things that really struck me watching the show was the fact that they all kind of have their own superpowers on top of being werewolves, which I just thought was like really neat. And so far we've seen them, you know, kind of going a bit haywire. We haven't really seen them stretch those muscles a whole lot. But how much will those different kind of superpowers come into play, and how will they kind of be able to help each other where one's kind of lacking in one area, the other one can kind of pick up the slack?
Yeah, you'll definitely see that a lot in more episodes. Like, Jeff did not just put those in there for a random reason. And there's certain lines and certain Easter eggs to where, like, it can't explain it. It just depends if people are going to pick up on that or not. But I think it sort of is like a metaphor for like a friend group in real life. Like, I learned from all of my friends because they're all different and they all teach me different things about myself and just about life in general. And it's kind of the metaphor that these powers are used for. It's like, why are all of our powers different? How come they are different? So in later episodes, you'll see them sort of figuring that out.
In episode 2, what can you tell us about the scene in the gym? Because Harlan, he's both having his hearing mess around on him, presumably because of this new influence of the new wolves or the monster coming back. But he also seems like uncontrollably distracted by these like fantasies. And he seems to like, this is sort of my interpretation. Like, he's in the gym, he's crushing on this guy. He's thinking about him, but he's also having these freak out moments of like losing control during sex. Like that seems to be what he's like afraid of. So is there a backstory there? Has that maybe happened to him before? Who is the boy in the yellow tank top? We're going to see him again. Like, is there a romance for Harlan with one specific person?
I think that the whole idea behind like his senses being heightened and the sexual fantasy that he's having is that it all gets heightened when that other side of him is trying to come out.
Mm.
Or, you know, when the moon's phases are changing. Obviously, Jeff has stayed true to like, you know, werewolves, full moon. But I think that it's just kind of out of Harlan's control, because even at the end of that scene, when, you know, that guy helps him pick up like the weights off of his chest.
Yes.
You would think Harlan's like, oh, he's trying to talk to me. Like, I'm attracted to this guy. But instead, he's like almost like scared.
Yeah.
And he's sort of confused. So I think it's something that's out of his control. And it's just a way of like Jeff portraying that.
Yeah. It made me think that he really wants some sort of like that. Yeah. That he like that he's lonely, but he's also quite potentially romantic, like that he wants a partner of some sort, and that he's sort of scared of going there.
Honestly, you're right. That's another good point. Like, I think also, you know, we see Harlan's already, you know, he clearly doesn't have a boyfriend or a significant other.
Yeah.
So he's sort of trying to just figure his stuff out with that as well.
Yeah. Well, I'm curious if we're going to see that boy again or if there'll be another boy, but I guess we'll have to wait and see.
Hey, we'll see.
Yeah.
Without spoiling it, obviously, what was the most difficult scene for you to film? And if you can't like say specifically, can you tell us whether it was like an action scene, a dramatic scene, a romantic or sort of like sex scene? Is there one that really stands out as like you really had to kind of push yourself beyond your comfort zone to be able to get that done?
Stunts and stuff, I mean, maybe. Yeah.
Honestly, you know, with whether it was like a really intimate sex scene or like a vigorous action scene where we had to like run or something like that, it was sort of just like try it out for the first time and then realizing that it wasn't challenging at all. I think honestly, the scenes that I struggled with the most were like the ones where I had like certain one-liners that I just could not do what the director wanted me to do. They're like, Tyler, just say it like this. And I'm like, okay. And I would say it. And it just like, I got so deep in my head. And I think it was even worse that it was just like one line, because I was like, this is so stupid. Like, it's literally a few words. Why can't I? Those are always the most challenging to me. I could literally do like monologues of like emotion and like crying or like any of that. But when it comes to those one lines, for some reason, I get so deep in my head about it.
That is so interesting. There's a lot of pressure to like get that one line exactly right, to say everything you need to say in one sentence. So I do kind of get that. So I guess on the flip side of that, do you have a favorite scene? Do you have a one that you really like doing?
I can't say because it is in a later episode, but we shot it all day. And it was actually something that I didn't really think I was capable of as an actor. And then I just did it and it happened. And it happened like really naturally and like pretty well. and I like surprised myself. And like it was definitely like a moment for me as an actor where I was like, I'm growing, like I'm progressing. And it's a really cool thing to see, you know. It's kind of like, you know, working out and seeing progress, or like, you know, working at a job and getting like promoted. Like it's that like level up that you feel. And it literally took all day, but I was like, so like never a dull moment with it.
That is so hard to like predict what that could be. When you say it was something that you didn't know, think you could do, are you talking about like something physical, or are you talking about like, I don't know, something dramatic? It's like, I'm just wondering, like, not necessarily fishing for spoilers. I'm just wondering how we can identify it in the future.
Emotion-wise, okay. It was definitely a very deep range of emotions that I had to portray in one scene.
Okay. Well, we'll have to...
Sort of, you know, all over the place.
We'll have to follow up on that later.
So I hope you guys can pick it out.
Yeah.
I hope you guys can.
As you were reading through the scripts, did you guess where the show was going to go by the finale, or did it take you totally by surprise? Because this definitely isn't like it's a very episodic show. It's not like, oh, we've got to the end of the episode and like that little story is finished. It's like, we don't know any of that. We've got two episodes in, we don't know anything. And we've been told specifically that we won't know any, like that we're not going to get a lot of answers until the end. So did it shock you in the end, or?
Yeah, honestly, I think every episode we would read, at some point there'd be a gasp. Like, no way! We definitely were like just sparking theories up left and right, hoping that one of them was correct. And Jeff would literally just blow our minds time and time again and just show us that like we have no idea where this story is going. But... You know, towards the end, I think we were sort of able to like piece it together better because we had more information. And we have our theories if there's a season two. So we'll see.
I definitely am excited for that. I'm excited to see how that plays out, really.
I am too.
Yeah.
I think one of the things that surprised me pretty early on in the show, just in these first two episodes, is that Everett and Blake are not the only ones who get bitten, which, you know, kind of did take me by surprise. So does that mean that the potential pack is bigger than we think, or like, you know, how does that story kind of... Can you tease us about how that story will kind of continue to play out?
Yeah, the characters that aren't you four, like the, you know, that was kind of where we got really surprised, the inclusion of more kids who, like in episode two with Connor, that totally shocked me, that there's like, it's not just our two new kids of Everett and Blake, there's other kids who are going to be important.
Well, so far from episodes one and two, I know that, you know, we see Everett and Blake like feeling the side effects from being bitten, and they're not really sure like what being bitten means. We're not really sure if
if being bitten is different than like being born, you know, like that sort of deal. And I know that we also see Connor and he's sort of, you know, on crutches and stuff, and he has a bite as well. So I know a lot of people are going to be like,
what?
How many people did this thing bite? But it will all make sense in like episode 5.
Okay.
It will all make sense.
It's yeah. Cause it's just a little bit different because obviously he wasn't, you know, called to, you know, he didn't heal like the others did. So it seems like there's like maybe a few elements at play that aren't quite expected or different kinds of things. So yeah, that was a big shock.
Yeah. And I know that like with Teen Wolf, like Jeff made the whole like ideology of like the alphas and the betas and all of that sort of deal. But I will say one thing, Wolfpack, like this universe of werewolves is a lot different.
The mythology and how the bite works, you mean? Okay.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Episode 2 also shows a flashback of Garrett finding the babies or the wolf puppies, and they are actually wolf puppies, not a morphed person or a monster. It is a natural wolf of some kind. So is there a chance, this is a big spoiler, but is there a chance that like Luna and Harlan's wolf form will progress into a natural wolf as opposed to like a monster face? Yeah.
Yeah. Honestly, I'm still kind of wondering that too. We were really talking to Jeff about that, and I know he's cooking up some crazy ideas because I know he wants it to resemble the Teen Wolf ideology in the sense that like, obviously there's different, like, honestly, we really don't know a lot.
Fair enough.
And you guys will realize at the end of the season, like, why, like, even we don't have a lot to work with, because the show is definitely, you know, plot-based character development, like, so far. It's not going to dive in straight to, like, these fields of, like, different types of wolves and, like, that sort of deal.
Fair enough.
Mm-hmm. Do we get to see more of Harlan and Luna as babies / puppies? Are there
children?
Yeah, because we obviously get a couple of flashbacks both in the first and the second episode. Do those flashbacks sort of carry throughout the rest of the season as well?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure there's a few flashbacks in there. It's more just for like, I feel like that's not even like a spoiler just because it's for like explanatory purposes.
Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're like the flashbacks will be very for like a reason, like leading into like, yeah, the way Jeff like ties everything together is very artistic and very like full circle.
We're also, again, we're going now into territory where you're just going to be like, wait and see. But we're seeing a lot of different animals or animal spirits maybe connect to the pack, like the ram with Everett, and in episode 2 the horse breaking down the door that Luna imagines. Is there anything at all you can tease about what the deal is with these animal visions or animal spirits or whatever the hell is going on? Like anything at all you can say about what to point us in a direction of any kind?
The only thing I really can say, not even like for sake of like spoilers, is that I'm pretty sure that the animals are used as like symbols, but
yeah,
I'm still trying to figure that out myself. So,
okay, well, we'll see.
The voice that is calling people, you know, the phone calls that Everett and Blake keep getting, they're warning them that something else is kind of looking to kill them. And it kind of implies that there's like two entities at play here. So there's like the monster and then some other being who obviously knows about the monster, but wants to kind of cover up their identity. And in the second episode, we see that Connor both gets called and gets chased down by something. So what can you tell us, what can you tease about potentially the different sort of like playing pieces that are out on the board right now?
It's definitely sort of a thing that will continue to drive the plot throughout the season. both the voice and the phone call and the monster are very important pieces in the story. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, fair enough.
That's all I can say. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, we're really getting into it. We've only got a couple more, but really getting into these things where you're just like, nope. Why are the twins so convinced that the other werewolf is their father and not their mother?
Honestly, I just think that ties into Harlan's like psychology about why he can't accept his stepdad.
Yeah,
I think he's just obsessed with like where are my original parents? Like, we were adopted. Like, I think it's sort of like, I'm assuming anyone who was adopted as a child, they want to know their biological parents. So I'm not sure if they like know that it is, or if they're just like assuming.
Yeah, fair enough. When we leave off episode 2, the kind of cliffhanger of episode 2 is that everyone has been picked up by the arson squad. Sarah Michelle Gellar is kind of rounding all the kids up. You know, they've caught Everett, they've got Blake in the car, and they come for Luna and Harlan at the hospital when they're waiting for Garrett. So what can we expect after episode 2 with this group of kids now being called in again for questioning? Like, what kind of can you tease about what's next right after episode 2?
Well, obviously with episode 1, like, Sarah gives Everett a call about like who's suspected for like being the arsonist and like that. Yeah. So you'll see that, like, you know, more of that suspicion driving Sarah's character. And, you know, obviously us being kids, like, she's convinced that it's, you know, some sort of high school delinquent that was trying to, like, you know. Yeah.
I think it's kind of fair to assume that because they keep being found in the fire that they're now maybe suspects. So, yeah, we'll have to.
Yeah, also, it's very suspicious, right, that they.
Yeah. Yeah. Karen, do you have any final questions before we let Tyler go after we've taken up so much time?
I don't think so. You answered a lot of questions, so thank you so much for taking the time to do that. You gave some really great things to think about.
Of course. It was great talking to you guys. Cool. I hope that we could do it again.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we would be up for it, you know, maybe at the end of the season to unpack what's going on or to tease something.
Yeah. Where I don't have to spoil anything.
Yeah, anything else that you wanted to kind of share about, like, things that you know you can tease that maybe we haven't mentioned, or things that you want to tell people about what to expect from the rest of the season? You know, even, you know, whether it's specific little things or anything, really.
Just like I was saying earlier about us being, you know, shocked with every script for every episode, I hope that that can translate for every episode that people watch.
Mm.
If so, just get ready for a treat. Like, it's,
I guess that's a really,
it's a
great
ride.
That's actually a really great point, which I will ask one final question about. Wolfpack is a week to week show, not a binge show, as not getting all dropped at once. So what difference do you think that's going to make to people? I assume that suspense is a big element of it. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that as frustrating as that could be, especially if you fall in love with the show and you have to wait every week, you know, leaving with that suspense or that cliffhanger is only going to make the reveals in the new episodes like even better. And then everyone will be able to go back and binge it and be like, oh, no way. Like, just figure out different things. It's one of those shows where there's a lot to unravel. Might take a few watches.
Cool. That's really cool. We will let you go. Thank you so much for hanging out with us. We really appreciate it and taking so much time. And good luck.
Thank
good
you guys
luck
so
with
much.
The launch tomorrow. So enjoy the responses.
I appreciate it. I'll talk to you guys soon.
Okay, so the interview's over now and we're back on a different day. So thank you for listening. Hopefully you enjoyed it. If you've got any thoughts about anything Tyler said, please contact us or him or both of us. You can reach out on our social media, though, NATW Podcast. We would love to hear about what you thought from the interview. So, yeah, until next time, bye.
Bye.
Hey, this is Jeff Davis. You're listening to Not Another Teen Wolf podcast, my favorite podcast in the world.